Welcome to All Sides with Dan Fisher. A few weeks ago, the Route 33 Nelsonville bypass opened. The 8.5-mile stretch of new highway is the final leg of the Ohio Department of Transportation's work to transform the road between Franklin County and the Ohio River into something like an interstate highway. Coming up later, we'll hear more about that plan and how the bypass worked in Lancaster and so far Nelsonville. But first, we consider perhaps the nation's most famous road and how the interstate system bypassed it and turned much of Route 66 into a ghost town. Joining us now is author and historian Michael Wallace. His book, Route 66, The Mother Road, was published in 1990 and it's credited with helping spark a resurgence of interest in the famous highway. Welcome to the show, Michael.
I'm glad to be with you.
When it was built in the mid-1920s and then again finished in up in the mid-30s, Route 66 was the fastest way to get from Chicago to L.A. What do you consider its heyday?
You hit it right on the head. Route 66, from its birth in the so-called Roaring Twenties, when we were between war and on the wagon, From there, it immediately went into several incarnations. The Dirty 30s, when it served this country during the 1-2 punch of the Depression and Dust Bowl and helped tunnel or funnel those Dust Bowl pilgrims and migrant workers to California following the scent of oranges in the Pacific surf. And that's when it became the Mother Road, a name given to it by John Steinbeck. Then there were those war years when civilian traffic virtually vanished and it became a road of war with all the military bases and even prisoner of war camps all along the highway between the Great Lakes and the Pacific. So then the heyday came really at the end of World War II, when this nation had prosperity. The GIs came home. They wanted to show their families where they had trained, where they had been. We had automobiles again, the GI Bill. So people took to the road in large numbers, and that went on for years, many years, into the 50s when our love affair with the internal combustion engine went full bloom and everyone had to have two big, thin, gas-guzzling Detroit sleds in their driveway. And that ultimately was one of the causes for the demise of 66. The road could no longer handle all that traffic, which went on, and until really when the last Route 66 signs were taken down in Williams, Arizona in 1984. It took that long, from 1956 with the Interstate Highway Act, almost 20 years later, to decommission the road. But now we're in this great renaissance and revival, and thank God we are.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest right now, Michael Wallace. He's an historian and author of the book Route 66, The Mother Road. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a quick call, 614-292-8513. So when the interstate started to go in, it did so gradually. Was the impact on Route 66 gradual as well?
Yes. It was the coming of the interstates was slow and very laborious. Construction cost tens of billions of dollars. But through it all, the federal government and its wisdom persisted. So a piece of the Mother Road was replaced here and there. Then the bypasses were constructed around various towns and cities. And little by little, the road was transformed into a service road for its own replacement. But all the while, the old U.S. 66, Highway 66 Association intervened and battled well into the late 70s to save the road. Not really. They knew that fight was over, but they were trying to get off-ramps for various towns and cities, and many of them didn't get that off-ramp, and hence we have death by interstate.
So it wasn't like a lobster cooking in increasingly hot water. They knew right away there was going to be trouble.
They did, and they tried to prepare for it as best they can. Mm-hmm. They being the U.S. Route 66 Association, which eventually just changed its name to the Main Street of America Association. Mm-hmm. But this was the biggest public works project ever, and there was no stopping that. But what they did want to prevent was more and more of this death by interstate for these small towns where Route 66 was, and in fact still is, Main Street.
Mm-hmm. What was the ultimate impact? Do you have any numbers you can whip out to tell us how many businesses shut down, how many people moved away? What do we know? How do we enumerate the impact?
That's a difficult question.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you this, just based on anecdotal evidence and my own experience on the road throughout my almost 68 years on Earth, and most of it spent in one of the eight Route 66 states. It was devastating. Angel Delgadillo, a great defender, a champion, a warrior of Route 66 in the little town of Seligman, Arizona, in the high desert, he used to wait for June every year because the floodgates opened and people left California and people came from the east. And within a couple of days, they were all over town, driving through, stopping to get fuel, eating, buying postcards, spending the night. On some stretches of 66, like in Seligman, sometimes it took 10 minutes for someone just to dash across the lanes of the highway to cross to the other side. There was so much traffic. When the bypasses, when the final decommissioning took place, he said it was like a dam went up, and there was nothing. There was nothing, just silence.
Now, did any of those roadside towns and cities survive? There is a renaissance, you said, afoot now.
Yep, there's a great renaissance, and it started right about 1990. I wrote my book purely as a love letter to the highway, but not only to the highway, to the people, because I knew people like Angel Delgadillo was still out there on the road. I knew Lillian Redman was still switching on the blue neon lights at her Blue Swallow Motel in Seligman. I knew Ted Drews on the old road in St. Louis was still dipping into big canisters of frozen custard. I knew that those people of the road were still there, and they still had a voice. They still had a chance. And this was an opportunity for more and more people to learn about our past, learn about America before it became generic. And by God, it's worked. 85% of the road, one alignment or another, can still be traveled. So we have this tremendous influx of people back to the road, not only domestic travelers, but so many travelers from overseas, from Western Europe, from Eastern Europe, from the Pacific Rim. The two fastest growing markets are Brazil and China. Canadians galore. And they want to take the classic American road trip. And since Route 66 is arguably the most famous highway in the world, those of us interested in preserving at least some examples of it believe the highway has an obligation, and we need to stick up for all lost roads, for the Father Road, the Great Lincoln Highway, which runs right through your state of Ohio.
Mm-hmm. That the road, National Road.
Runs, mm-hmm. It's just a tremendous highway. But 66 got all the press.
Well, it got the reasons.
It got the song. It got the TV show. It got the Grapes of Wrath. And, after my book came out, that spurred it, and that led to the work we did with Pixar and Disney.
We'll get to that in just a second. First, I want to take a call from Matt in Columbus. You're on the air, Matt.
Yes, I just got back from Route 66 and met Angel on a very, very deserted Route 66 on a Monday morning. And he was very happy to sell me a Route 66 hat. We went because we got closed out of Grand Canyon, but I don't regret the trip. And you are quite right. There are still a lot of really cool places out there waiting for the renaissance.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
Yeah.
let's talk about, you brought up the Pixar movie Cars. It was based on the mother road, Route 66, and you had a hand in that movie, including the voice part of the sheriff of Radiator Springs, which is great. How did the movie makers do in depicting the soul of the road to you?
Well, they did quite well, and at the risk of sounding egotistical, it was because I was their consultant.
Right.
And I made damn sure they got the story right, and of course they did. They showed what could happen to a small town with the coming of the super slab, as I call it, the interstate highway. You know, a length of boring, homogenized highway. Now, even I have a pike pass, and I live in Oklahoma, but I still go back to the old road, and that's what this is all about. We're not trying to take the place of the interstates. Lord knows we're too far gone with all of our concrete and cars and fuel for that, but it's so nice to have this example of the past, and that's what Pixar wanted. That's what John Lasseter wanted. And so I took them out on the road, up and down the road. So every...
I'm sorry, Michael Wallace, are you still there? I think we lost Michael Wallace. Maybe we can get him back for a few minutes real quickly. If no one's listening, then I guess we'll just go to a break right now and say thank you to Michael Wallace, historian and author of the book Route 66, The Mother Road. He's also, if you recognize his voice, he did the voice part of the sheriff of Radiator Springs in the Pixar animated movie Cars. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Dan Fisher. It looks like we got Michael Wallace back on the air. Michael, welcome back.
Thank you so much. In my exuberance, I don't know how long I was talking without you hearing me, so I'm not sure where we left off.
Right. I was. I apologize. I'm not either. But we were talking about Cars, the Pixar animated movie Cars.
And the impact it had, mm-hmm. I think, yeah. What Pixar really did get it right, and that's what John Lasseter wanted to do. And so when I took them out on the road many, many times, they actually ate it up in big bites and gulps, and we went slow down the road the way you should go. And they really did understand what was going on. They understood that life really does start at the off-ramp, and that this represented good, bad, and ugly the way America was. Like me, John Lasseter isn't necessarily a big believer in the so-called good old days. The good old days depended on the color of your skin and many other factors when you were traveling. And that's a whole other show for you about diversity on the road. But the point is, in that film, we were able to get the message across, and it turned on so many Europeans, so many Asians, and importantly, so many kids. The movie worked if you were 5 or you were 85, but it really got the kids thinking about this old varicose two-lane road, and it shows to this day.
As far as Route 66 goes, it was the whole Eisenhower Interstate Freeway movement in the 50s. Of course, it was part of something much bigger, but Route 66 was the site of many accidents. It became too crowded in places.
Oh, yes. Route 66 goes through 8 states, and there really wasn't a state that didn't have a section called Suicide Corner or Blinney Curve, or, you know, it could be a killer, because it is not an airport runway. You know, of all people, Robert Blake, the great English artist and philosopher, famously said, roads of improvement are straight roads, but the roads of genius are crooked. And Route 66, the Lincoln Highway, those are roads of genius.
Brian in Columbus, you're on the air with Michael Wallace, author of Route 66, The Mother Road. Hi, Brian.
Hi. I was wondering if your guest would care to comment on the Snow Cone, or Snow Cap, I think it is, restaurant in Seligman, Arizona. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Brian.
The Snow Camp drive-in on the shoulders of the Mother Road in Seligman was run for many years by Juan Delgadillo, the brother of Angel Delgadillo, who we talked about. Angel's barbershop, one chair barbershop, is next door to the Snow Cap. And Juan, the late Juan, was known as the Clown Prince of Route 66. He was a joker with a poker face. He was a marvelous man. And now his sons and his grandchildren are running the Snow Cap. I was cruising through Route 66 one night doing a big media event with CBS, and I was in an anniversary model Corvette with my wife, Suzanne. It was dark, and we knew everything would be shut down in town because it was in the middle of the night, and we were just trying to make some time. And as I approached the Snow Cap, I saw a shadowy figure on the edge of the highway, and I got closer, and it was Juan in his white apron with a big broom sweeping the road. And I pulled up and I said, Juan, ¿qué pasa? What's going on, amigo? And he looked at me and said, Miguel, I'm cleaning the Mother Road.
So that sort of caretaking did go on, just like you depicted in Cars.
It still goes on. And I've, you know, I'm one who never pulls a punch. I don't know if you heard me say this earlier. I don't romanticize the
right.
trip. There were wrecks. I mean, it was a highway. There were speed traps. There were flat tires, overheated radiators. That was not a pleasant journey for the Okies and the Arkies and the Dust Bowl Pilgrims. It was tough. It still can be tough. But it's not predictable. And predictable is a word most of us who were involved in this movement don't care for. There's some good, high, and really safe adventure on the road. Something is always waiting for you around the next turn and bend. And that's what pulls people to the road from Hamburg and Schenectady and Paris.
I know you probably don't want to play favorites, but if someone has only one day to spend on Route 66, do you have a stretch you recommend?
Yeah, that's a very difficult question. But if you only had one day and you could be helicoptered out of west of Albuquerque, there's a stretch of 2-lane old concrete 66 west of Albuquerque that snakes around the mesas and rocks just as it does in Radiator Springs and takes you into old Laguna Pueblo. That is the essence of the highway. Swallows with their mud nest up against the walls. You look to see if Clayton Moore, the Lone Ranger, is going to ride down any moment. I was going through there with Lassiter and the creative team, and we stopped because there was an old Laguna Indian man stopped in his battered pickup, just stopped in his lane on the highway, and we pulled up next to him, and he looked at us and smiled, and we looked back at him, and he just said to us, how do you like my highway?
Well, Michael Wallace, thanks so much for joining us today to talk about the highway.
It's my pleasure, and good luck to you all.
Thank you. Michael Wallace, he's an historian and author of the book Route 66, The Mother Road. And maybe you recognized his voice. As I said, he is the sheriff. He played his voice as that of the sheriffs from the Pixar animated film Cars. 614-292-8853 is the number to call if you would like to join the conversation coming up about the Route 33 bypass in Nelsonville. Joining us a few weeks ago, the U.S. Route 33 Nelsonville bypass opened. The 8.5-mile stretch of new highway is the final leg of the Ohio Department of Transportation's transformation of the road between Franklin County and the Ohio River. Engineers predict it will pair 20 minutes from the Columbus to Athens trip. 8 years ago, another bypass was installed around Lancaster, and like the folks in Nelsonville, people there anticipated it with almost equal parts dread and enthusiasm. Traffic would be streamlined, but it would also go away. Joining us now by phone from Lancaster is Mike Pettit. He's the city's director of economic development. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
What was traffic like in Lancaster before the bypass went in?
You know, we were very congested with trucks and low quality traffic because of those trucks, and all the good traffic and all the locals were finding their own bypasses around Lancaster.
What were people most concerned about before the bypass opened?
Well, there were certain apprehension and fear of, you know, what would happen when this traffic would go away. The initial calculations from ODOT that was provided was that 50% of the traffic would go away, and then we would increase 1.6% a year thereafter. We kind of argued that we didn't think it was going to be that low. We thought that because those people avoided Memorial Drive because of those large trucks and the heavier traffic, that those folks would come back to Memorial Drive. And that's what happened. We probably lost about 20% of the numbers. I think that's the category where we have gone down. But it's been growing back up as predicted as well.
I'm talking with Mike Pettit. He's the director of economic development for Lancaster, where the Route 33 bypass went in about 8 years ago. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. I should say 5 years ago, right?
It was 2006.
2006, okay. 614-292-8513. Did you live in Lancaster at the time? What did you make of the bypass? Mike Pettit, what are some of the logistical ways the bypass changed the city? Did as many people, is there more parking there? Is the traffic changed in the flow of the traffic, like, for instance, rush hour?
Yes, definitely. The flow of traffic has increased dramatically, and the timing of those lights is more critical now that the traffic is flowing, to keep that traffic flowing. One of the good things that it did, it created us not only getting those trucks, those through trucks off that aren't going to stop and, you know, have a sandwich or, you know, buy something from a store. It opened up an area for us industrially. We have what's called Rock Mill Industrial Park that we have immediate access onto the 4-lane 33 now that makes it much more marketable for us to attract jobs.
So, in other words, it's connected to the bypass.
Yes.
But the taxes and the revenue and so forth come to Lancaster.
Correct.
How did the community end up changing because of this? In any particular way besides that industrial park, which is not insignificant, understood?
Well, yeah, it has. It is actually, we've increased our retail presence. In 2007, we added approximately 1 million square feet of retail. Our car dealerships, and this is along Memorial Drive, our car dealerships have made significant investment and improvement. They actually, car dealerships are kind of ones that you can use as a gauge to see what's going on, where people are coming from to buy cars.
Mm-hmm.
And they've actually seen an increase from the northern part of our county and into Franklin County, where folks are coming to Lancaster to shop for cars. And that, coupled with all the retail that we've added, it's kind of now a retail hub for all of southeastern Ohio. You don't have to go all the way into Columbus for the major stores.
I used to work out of Lancaster, and I always thought it was a shame right out of the downtown area that so many people didn't see the downtown and all the antique stores, and there were some great fun restaurants. How has that changed?
Well, there's a significant improvement going on in the downtown as well. The city did a revitalization with sidewalks and streetscapes, and that was prior to the bypass.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, there has been investment going on downtown and a renewed focus to make the downtown a better place. The city just announced municipal courts were going to completely renovate as a building called the Columbian, and it will go in all municipal courts, and our law department will be going into that. So that's a big plus. It's over a $7 million project, and it's preserving that history and a nice quality building going back to a very good use.
The bypass, too, is a beautiful way to see the countryside.
It is a beautiful. And for us, for a timing standpoint, I know I just went to South Carolina a couple weeks ago on vacation, and, Withville was, 4.5 hours, where it used to take over 5 to get there. And that's very important for us industrially as well, to access those southern markets.
Now, I remember back in the day there was the Jolly Pirate Donut Shop.
Yes.
And I used to go there to find out what was going on in town. Is that still there? Was that hurt? Were those kind of places hurt?
That actually went out prior to the bypass.
Mm-hmm.
It went away for, there's a Walgreens there now.
Now, was there any businesses that do declare that they were hurt by the bypass and that's why they went out of business, or that their business has been hurt?
I don't think anybody has gone out because of the bypass. And the only one that I can think of that even closed its doors was an ice cream shop. But I think that they were closing anyway. Their building wasn't in very good shape, and the folks had pretty much retired and, weren't reinvesting. And so at that location now is a 3-center strip mall.
Okay, and part of that 1 million square feet of new retail?
That is not included in that 1 million square feet.
I was going to ask you then, where is that retail located? Did they expand the mall down there? Or
it is just north and west of the mall, but we added Menards and Kohl's and Giant Eagle and Walmart and Max and Irma's and a host of other restaurants, banking centers. I think there's about 6 restaurants in there that have been added together, plus, PetSmart and those kind of pet supplies, that kind of thing has gone on. And we're continuing to grow. Dick's Sporting Goods came into the mall from an old Macy's spot.
Mm-hmm.
And when they went away with their smaller footprints, we have Big Sandy's under construction. It's 50,000 square feet. It's under construction. Should be open for the Christmas season, and it's a retail of furniture and appliances.
What about the impact on residential development?
Lancaster has grown 1% a year in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's the average. So we continue to grow. The county as a whole, I think, is the 4th fastest growing county in the state of Ohio. And, we're growing. I'm also the general manager of Lancaster Municipal Gas. So I see the numbers rolling in here, and the applications for gas service, I sign off on every one. So we're certainly seeing an uptick in that from the downside of the 2007-2008 years.
There was some hard feeling back in the day about the acquisition of land that was necessary for a project that size. How has that been resolved, or how was it resolved? Is there anything still simmering out there?
I don't think there is. Most of the folks, my office is right out close to the bypass.
Mm-hmm.
And I touch, as economic development, I touch with the farmers and the larger property owners, and I think they see it more as an opportunity rather than any you know problems. They've moved on, you know. They received their monies from the state of Ohio for that land acquisition, and I'm not hearing any bitterness.
Okay, well, Mike Pettit, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mike Pettit, he's Director of Economic Development for Lancaster, Ohio. The bypass went in 2006, the Route 33 bypass there. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Route 33 bypass around Nelsonville. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A few weeks ago, the U.S. Route 33 Nelsonville Bypass opened. The 8.5-mile stretch of new highway is the final leg of the Ohio Department of Transportation's transformation of the road between Franklin County and the Ohio River. Since the plans first were made for the bypass, some in Nelsonville have worried, but Sheila Warren of the Nelsonville Quilt Company is enthused.
I was born and raised here. My husband was born and raised here, and we're both extremely happy that it's here. Saves a lot of time. The congestion in Nelsonville was unbelievable before this took place. And we still have a lot of people coming in from out of state, from, you know, all over the state, and we have no problem with anybody getting here to us. So, no, I don't think it's hurt us one bit. Very happy that it's here.
Joining us now by phone from Nelsonville is Jennifer LaRue. She's owner and studio potter at the Nelsonville Emporium. Welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Well, thank you for having me here.
So you just heard Sheila Warren mention that traffic has slowed in Nelsonville. Do you agree? And what is the change meant to your business?
Well, I thought for sure it would be a lot slower when you got back out on Old 33, but there's still a nice pleasant flow of traffic. And we've had a lot of people in lately that say they've come from the Hocking Hills or, say, Ohio University, and it's just a nice easy jaunt off the highway now to get to us, and not traffic when you get here. You can get to your destination.
They're not afraid to get off the highway, worried that they won't be able to get back on.
Well, lots of people are just trying it out right now, too. So, no, I don't think there's any problem there. It's a comfortable, you know, get off, get something to eat, visit some shops, get back on.
Tell us about the Emporium, what kind of business it is.
Well, we have all local artwork here. We have over 85 local artists selling their ware. We have a full line of ceramic supplies, and then there's five of us studio potters who work in the back. It's an old department store that we converted into a gift shop.
And how long have you been around?
Well, I've been around since 2002 in Nelsonville, mm-hmm. and I've lived in Athens County for a while. I helped open Starbrook Clay and then moved over to the location where the Nelsonville Quilt Company is now. They have my old storefront space. They've turned into their studio where they make and sew and do different classes and projects. And mm-hmm. then helped guide me onto the square, which is really nice. We're right by the historic fountain.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're in the square now. I guess I was visualizing you in the old place. How did you prepare for the bypass? Were you excited about it, or were you worried about it?
Well, I'm part of the group of believers that it's going to help make us more of a destination. I don't know if you're aware that Ohio Magazine had voted us one of their best hometowns in Ohio in 2011.
I was not, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it was wonderful. It was really nice, but I'm kind of like, it was a little too early because we keep growing. It's amazing. I mean, new shops come in. There's a lot of potential. I mean, I know we still have some vacant spots, and we need a really good restaurant, and we could use a bakery and a bike shop to attach the bike path to Athens, like Athens Farmers Market and that. But there's a lot of potential here, and there's a lot of groups right now. We keep going to meetings, and there's a lot of great enthusiasm. And what they're trying to do, we've had help with the Hocking Hills Tourist Association and with the Athens County Convention and Visitors Bureau. They're trying to find a way to get all this great activity and promise for growth and energy kind of hubbed under maybe the Nelsonville Chamber and the Athens Chamber. And then that way our groups can be stronger and work more efficiently. And, this is kind of our time to shine. So,
what was it like in your experience? What was the relationship with the Ohio Department of Transportation and how they managed the project?
Well, interestingly enough, I got to see a couple little snippets along the way. They really tried to keep people informed and let you know, what was happening on the sides of your community, why they were doing construction on certain areas and how this would affect the flow of traffic, noise in the city, safety. I thought they did a really nice job of, they were even very concerned about the wildlife in the area, making sure it stays off the highway. And so they kept us informed with that. But I don't know if you saw that the Main Street program of Nelsonville did a big bypass event. And they did it with Big Brothers and Little Sisters and with the Nelsonville Athletic Boosters. So there was three groups who teamed together to do a run, walk, or bike on the unopened bypass the day before it opened.
And it was incredible.
They had over 500, I think, 26 participants. And it was a fundraiser, and it was really well received by everyone who participated. And people enjoyed seeing the new bypass and being able to be a part of it. I think that really helped with everyone, kind of linking everyone together.
I don't know what your experience has been in regards to this, but a lot of people from Columbus head down through Nelsonville to get to Ohio University, as you all know. Is there any sense that more of those people are relaxing a little bit more and just dropping by, or is there a sense that they are just using the bypass just to get around Nelsonville?
Well, there's probably a little bit of both, but one of the nice things is that people who go by, I think, are seeing some signs on the bypass that makes it so they don't forget us. They'll see the Nelsonville Quilt Company sign. I know the visitor centers are trying to help us get a couple more signs that say, come see the historic square district. We have the Opera House here that brings a lot of folks in, so now maybe people aren't stuck in the bottleneck traffic and might kind of get off the bypass and maybe go to the train station or go for a hike or, you know, something they can get here a little bit easier without being stuck in what was kind of our rush hour deal here. We do a Final Fridays program every last Friday of the month. And a lot of times that kind of the traffic affected how many people would turn out on the square. And that was because if there was anything happening at Ohio University, there would be a lot of traffic kind of stuck, and people wouldn't want to wait through all of the rush hour traffic to get to our event. So now we've already had our smoked meat fest, and things are well attended. You know, people can get here, and then they can enjoy their stay and then get home without being congested.
What about parking?
They took our parking meters out, which I was a little skeptical at first. Because I was afraid people would park there and stay there. But they took them out, and they put a two-hour sign on, which I think they're even thinking about changing to just no overnight parking so people can really relax while they shop. But it has made so many people happy. I mean, they'll come in the shop, and they'll say, oh, I'm so glad we don't have to pay because I wasn't quite sure where I was going. I think I'll go over to the left and the right and see a couple more shops, get a bite to eat at Fullbrook's. So, no, I think there's not a parking problem in Nelsonville, so I don't think that should be a concern for visitors.
And how might you change your shop in the future? What does this mean to you going forward?
Well, I have big plans in the shop. This was an old department store, so it's quite a large space. And when I moved over here about a year and a half ago, I designated a spot for a kitchen area. A couple things I think we need in Nelsonville is a restaurant, but I don't really want to be a restaurant. And we need a bakery, but I don't really want to work baker's hours. And some people said you should do taffy or something else so that the visitors can all come. I mean, we're right in the middle of Hocking Hills and Athens. So both of those places get in the millions of visitors each year. I think Hocking Hills was quoted with almost having the same amount of visitors as Yellowstone National Park last year. So we have all these visitors right on the outside of us. They go to Rocky Boots, they go to the train station. And if I could have a small kitchen in here where I have something that's the best of for Nelsonville, like I'm thinking us potters, we like to knead. So we probably do some pretzels, some gluten-free pretzels, some spelt pretzels. If I could do that and then maybe dip a couple of them in chocolate and have some chocolate Starbucks that you can get, then I would have maybe more visitors in here. So I just want the store to improve and to have something that it can offer all the masses. And hopefully those people will come on the square and start shopping more. I know the holidays is a great time to have local artwork because a lot of people try to shop locally.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really hoping for a really good holiday season.
Well, I've been down there many times for the Christmas train, and that's always a lot of fun, a big pull. So Jennifer LaRue, owner and studio potter at the Nelsonville Emporium, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me here.
Jennifer LaRue, and joining us now is Mickey Brooks. She's a realtor and founder of Full Brooks Cafe in Nelsonville, soon to be owner of a local inn. Welcome to the show, Mickey.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. You just heard, we heard from Sheila Warren. She mentioned that traffic has slowed in Nelsonville. Well, what has that meant to your business?
Well, let me start by telling you that my business, which was Full Brooks Cafe, I sold a month ago to a young woman and man who had worked for me for 8 years. And I felt that the time was right for them to take this business over, and I gave them an opportunity to own it.
Mm-hmm.
And I check in on them daily because it was my baby, and you can't let go of your baby in a month. And I just checked in today. They had their biggest day ever. Actually, I think it's the biggest day ever for the cafe in 10 years, this past Saturday during the Smoked Meat Festival. So I would tell you, though, if they've only owned it for a month, they are having record-setting days. So the bypass to this point has not affected our business.
It hasn't been a hindrance, and could it have been a help?
It could have been a help because we have there's a thought that some people have put forth, and it's that when there were so many visitors, so many drivers going through Nelsonville, if 100 people were driving through to get from point A to point B, 95 were going from point A to point B. 5 might have been coming to Nelsonville as their final destination. Now those 95 are out of the way, and it makes it easier and more pleasant for those that are actually coming to visit either one of the, you know, I know I heard Jennifer's interview, and she mentioned the things that we have here in our small town that really set us apart from a town our size, Rocky Boots, World Headquarters, Hocking Valley Scenic Railroad, Hocking College, Stewart's Opera House. We are different than a town of 5,000 that might have been bypassed. So we do have attractions that people come for. So I think it's made it easier.
People were worried at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
When they were first making plans, people were really worried. How did you feel at the outset?
I always felt positive. I always felt, because where our square is located, we have been bypassed. Always. We would look out onto 33 because Full Brooks, you can see out on 33. And we would see car after car after car after car driving right by the turn to come to the square. And so we've always been bypassed. And to that end, our Chamber of Commerce decided several years ago that we needed to be event driven. We are not, because of our location being nestled in the Wayne National Forest, and we are surrounded by it,
mm-hmm.
and it's very insulating, and we like that. At the same time, it has been a hindrance to growth. Hindsight is that's been a good thing because now we are that place that's not full of concrete and full of blacktop. We are just a lovely little pedestrian-friendly town square. So even though some were fearful that our town would die, there were those of us who these events that said, we're not going to let it die. And the way we're not going to let it die is we're going to have something planned and going on and utilize our town square as much as possible. So
we spoke to Anthony Schultz. He's the executive chef and general manager of Rhapsody, a local restaurant. Yeah. And he was cautious. Let's listen.
Anytime you affect, I mean, you're talking about thousands of people going through town every week. And when you take, you know, just to throw a number out, you take half out. That's a lot of eyes that you're taking off of sort of the signage and stuff like that. So it'll affect some negatively. And you want the mom and pop shops to stay open, whether it's a homegrown bank or a grocery store.
Wow, I got to tell you, that was really hard to hear. I have no idea what Anthony said.
Okay, well, I'll tell you. He said that he's worried that it's going to affect kind of the homegrown shops. There aren't going to be as many eyes on the local bank or the grocery store and that sort of thing. And I was going to ask you if you think...
Anthony has only been at that restaurant for a month. Maybe 2 months.
Uh-huh.
I've been on that square for 10 years, and so I would have to disagree with Anthony. Though our Kroger's is not on the square, and it is, you know, it is the local grocery store that it is the only grocery store. So I can't see that the bypass is going to hurt Kroger's. So, you know, I would say from my perspective and my husband Jay and I, have taken a huge leap of faith in our town by purchasing an older home, and we're going to turn it into an inn.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, you know, you don't do that if you think your town's going to die. We have a lack of hotel rooms here in Nelsonville. We had a Hocking College used to operate a facility, and I believe they had 40 rooms maybe, and it was part of the training center when they were training students for hotel motel management. That facility is no longer open. We now have 2 bed and breakfasts, and that's a total of about 8 rooms. And we're going to add 3 more rooms because ours will be suites, and they'll be large and spacious and fabulous. And we could use another bed and breakfast. We've decided there'd be nothing wrong if we became the Cape May of southeastern Ohio. And though we don't have anyone coming up that wants to invest and put that large investment into some kind of a hotel, it's nice to have some smaller businesses or folks that are willing to take that leap of faith and say, hey, I could do a bed and breakfast. So that's what we're doing.
We talked to the Director of Economic Development for Lancaster about the impact of the Route 33 bypass up there. And mm-hmm. one of the big changes was the ability to develop an industrial park right mm-hmm. by the bypass so that there'd be that immediate access to it. The trucks wouldn't be going through the town because that's as much of a downer, I guess, for truckers as it is for the town that is being disturbed by it. But do you know if there's anything in the works along those lines, or are you so insulated by the forest that there's not that kind of development available?
It's not available. I don't know if you've had the opportunity to drive on this bypass, but I would have to say it's one of the most beautiful stretches of miles. I don't know if it's 6 miles. It's gorgeous. You'd feel like you're in Tennessee. You're high up and you can see the trees. It's all Wayne National. And they're, in fact, having a billboard is practically impossible because Wayne National will not allow billboards to be put up. So there's very little space or property to even consider putting a billboard to invite people just to come into Nelsonville. Mm-hmm. So that's a good and a bad thing. But no, that's not going to happen that I can see because yep. all that land is Wayne National.
Okay. Well, Mickey Brooks, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for inviting me to put my two cents worth in.
Mickey Brooks, she's founder of Full Brooks Cafe and in Nelsonville and soon to be owner of a local inn there. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.